Okay, good day everyone. This is Bob Firevid. I'd like to begin our teleseminar today. Thank you all for participating. Today, Brent Broughton of Hunterwood Technologies will be talking about Hunterwood's equipment for densification. And wanted to remind everyone before we started to, unless you're talking, to please put your phone on mute. If you don't have a mute button on your phone, you can use star 6 and that will mute your line. You can press star 6 again and that will unmute your line. If you have any questions that you need a clarification about something on a slide or something he said, Brett said, you can ask it at the time, but otherwise, please wait until the end and you, there'll be a period of time for Q&A. So I will notify the operator to come online, and after that, Brett, if you could start your presentation.
Okay, thank you. This is the operator, and I just want to remind all participants this conference call is being recorded, and if you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you. I guess I'll start off with an introduction. My name is Brett Broughton. I'm with Hunterwood Technologies. We're a Canadian-based that specializes in building equipment, custom manufacturing, basically, for the hay and forage export industry. And this presentation, as you can see on slide one, we're going to talk about some feedstock logistics, and we're going to specifically talk on densification. The slides have been numbered. I will try and mention the slide number that I'm on before we get to that topic. So, slide number two. Some of the logistical issues that everybody's faced with when looking at biomass products is, you know, the traditional harvest, storage, and transportation. Moving on to slide three. When harvesting, right now we're looking at two options. You use your traditional harvesting equipment. That's going to produce round bales, large bales, 3x4s or 4x4s, small square bales being the 2-tie and 3-tie models, or field choppers, that's taking the product off the field loose. Alternatively, I believe this industry is starting to generate some customized, specialized harvesting equipment like field pellet equipment and cubers and other sort of processing equipment to try and add density and eliminate multiple steps in the process. When it comes to storage, slide number four, you have your traditional storage methods. You can see here we got round bales, big squares, and 3-tie bales. Generally, they're just tarped. This presents some issues. You have the weather. You have space limitations. There can be damage from UV and other elemental issues that you can deal with, as well as the high probability of having a haystack go up by fire. Transportation, slide five, just sort of shows a few photos of some of the traditional transportation methods. Moving on to slide number six, transportation by truck and trailer is definitely the most common. You see a little bit by train, but that, you know, that really depends on location and proximity to rail lines and proximity to the final market for the hay. Trucking costs have been identified as one of the highest costs in the logistics supply chain, and low field density is generally part of the problem. You need more trucks to move the amount of product that you need to get to these facilities. Additionally, the existing bale formats can be difficult to load and safely secure. You know, if you look at that photo of round bales, you can see that a round bale doesn't strap down quite as nice as a large square does, or even the 3-tie stacks. And sometimes the loading equipment required in the field, whether it be a tractor with a spike or some sort of haystack mover, can sometimes be difficult to come by. Moving on to slide number seven, we really want to ask the question on why would you even bother densifying your product? Two reasons, really. Number one, maximize your transportation, and number two, maximize your storage. Since our company is involved in double compression and compressing for density, the question then becomes, why would you select double compression for biomass products? Slide number 8 looks at bale density, and the first column in that graph shows your field density, and depending on the product, you're usually going to be somewhere between 7 and 12 pounds per cubic foot of product. Now, that does vary depending on what type of grass or what kind of material you're in. When you look at pellets or cubes or some of the other processes that have been suggested, generally you can get your density very close to or above 30 pounds per cubic foot. When compressed through a Hunterwood 7700 forage compactor, we're seeing densities that are in the 26 to 30 pounds per cubic foot. So, you know, density is one reason. Move on to the next page about production rates. This is the real slayer. When you look at most pellet and cube facilities running one machine, their ability to process is about 8 to 10 metric tons per hour, which if you calculate this out on an annual basis is going to get you around 42,000 metric tons per year. When you compare that to the Hunterwood 7700 processing speed, we have a machine that's capable of densifying at a rate of 40 tons an hour or greater. And you forecast that out and extrapolate the data a little bit, you can see the significant advantage of volume in the supply chain at 170,000 metric tons. And the machines that we build are very industrial, and they're designed to do this kind of volume. Moving to page 10, talking about the harvest. Hunterwood has a machine that can accept virtually any bale format that's existing in the marketplace right now. Two-type bales, three-type bales, 3x3, 3x4, 4x4, round bales, or loose product. I should note that round bales in the export industry generally don't have the quality required to be exported, so our machines haven't been optimized for round bales. However, being a custom manufacturer, we could certainly do that. Today, they would need to be unrolled or put through some sort of shredding or teaser machine, and there are lots of different models of similar devices out there that can do that. Basically, what I'm trying to say is you don't require any specialized equipment required to harvest the products if you're going to feed them into a Hunterwood forage compactor. Slide number 11, talking about hay storage. Once compressed, and these are pretty good images of Hunterwood product, the packages can be very easily stacked. They can also be easily handled with a forklift. These bales can be stacked too wide and up to, it shows 6, but I believe we have facilities that go up to 9 bales high depending on the reach on their forklift. And it's a very dense product. You won't see bottom bales collapsing. There's a very unlikely chance of the stack tipping over due to soft spots in the product, that sort of stuff. And additionally, the density of the product and packaging materials assist in repelling new moisture. It just can't absorb because it's already compressed, as well as the sleeves that we put on these products are a plastic material, and they do assist in repelling. In most cases, storage will be indoors, but there is no reason why you couldn't put this stuff outside and tarp it as well. It would perform very well. Moving on to slide number 12, transportation of compressed hay. Our equipment is designed to maximize densities in all formats of shipping. So right now we can optimize truck, train, and shipping container transportation methods. And you can see some images here. We got a shipping container on the right-hand side. I think we can put 60 bales in a shipping container, and that gets us to 26.5 metric tons. And the image on the left is a rail car, just a standard box car, and I believe we're reaching over 100 tons of material inside that box car. Basically, when you densify, you can put more product in, and that's really what Hunterwood is. We're in the transportation business, and we want to maximize your efficiencies for transportation and storage. Page number 13. Other reasons to use compression. You have customizable fiber length during the processing. We can set up our machine to provide varying length fibers. the densification also, although there's been really no study of this, would reduce position density and available oxygen. An important thing to note in this process is infrastructure, these machines already exist. There is capacity in the export industry. So there are a number of companies in the United States, Australia, and around the world that already use forage compacting machines, already figured out logistics and how to move a to and from the export industry. So this would be a huge college base to work with. It also looking product streams, their machines to be processing. So testing could be done, or you know, miniature projects done just by tapping into existing infrastructure, available capacity in the forage export industry.
Excuse me, Brett. This is Bob Fire, but somebody's got noise in the background. If you've got a phone that's not muted, please mute it. Thank you. Go ahead, Brett.
No problem. Hunterwood's been around for about 15 years, and we have a number of these machines in the industry, and we would consider this to be proven and reliable technology, and we also offer very high processing volumes. Page 14, how can Hunterwood Technologies help? First off, we're going to maximize your transportation with maximum weight containers or trucks or trains or whatever works out best for your particular model. We're going to give you the maximum output possible in the shortest period of time. We automate all of our facilities to try to limit product handling and staffing requirements, as well as forklifts and loading and unloading equipment. Basically, we're going to provide you a fully automated hay processing facility. We also provide tools to the customer to manage their downtime and manage their processes. We have online monitoring software that links into our machines to track production volumes and provide downtime reports to maintenance personnel and that sort of stuff. So we've really looked at the forage processing as a full production facility, and we want to be able to provide tools to analyze production and tools to make sure that you have the greatest uptime possible. In the export industry, downtime is a big issue. If they can't put hay out, they can't make any money, and they can't keep their customers happy. And I would expect a very similar issue to exist when you're dealing with providing stock to a power company or to somebody who's trying to convert it for other fuel purposes. So Hunterwood likes to work with customers to make sure that they have all the tools that they need to manage their facilities properly. Some background on Hunterwood Technologies. We're located in Cochrane, Alberta, Canada. We were formed in 1994. Rick Littlewood is the principal owner and is still very active in the design and operating of the company. We're dedicated to the forage export industry right now. We've built 57 forage presses. We have customers throughout the world, predominantly Canada, USA, Australia, and we have a machine or two in Northern Europe as well. Slide number 16, the Hunterwood design philosophy. Basically, we take an engineered approach. We try and build things that are simple and have modular design so that they can be expanded upon in the future as our customers' needs change or the market wants to move in a different direction. We use high-quality components and materials. We view ourselves as industrial processing equipment as opposed to agricultural-based equipment. And what that means is we just put an engineered approach. We make everything a little heavier than you would see on agricultural equipment. And that's just due to the processing volumes and the next point, which is the power, efficiency, and speed that our machine can achieve, which requires that extra industrial focus. We also consider ourselves the world leader for pioneering and innovation in the hay export industry. The large majority of hay exporters in North America are using Hunterwood equipment and are very happy to be doing so. I'd like to introduce that can produce these products that you see, produce these speeds, and it's the Hunter Road Technologies SC7700 4-inch compactor on slide number 17 there. Going on to 18, some of the features of this machine, obviously the volume, it's an automated machine. It can accept a multiple type of inputs. So on this particular machine, we can do loose products, 3x4, 4x4 bales. We're working on developing a system to accept three tie bales as well. These machines are very versatile. It can process nearly every kind of biomass that's put into it, and if it's put into in a loose format, and I'll show some images here in a few minutes that show you some of the options on how to feed the machine. But basically, any loose product can go in there, from wood chips to corn stover to rice straw to the standard forage products that we press today. And we press a wide variety of forage products throughout the world. Oat and hay in Australia, alfalfa, timothy, Sudan grass, bluegrass, you know, and on the list goes. We haven't met a forage product that can't be densified yet. We've done some initial testing with miscanthus grass, and I believe we've also tested some rice straw products through the machine, and it performed nearly identical to how it would in other forage products like alfalfa, timothy, that sort of stuff. We're going to move over to slide number 19. This is just an overhead view of the machine. I'm just going to go through this really quickly. If you start on the left-hand side of the page, there's a feed table. This is where you place the bales, the big bales coming into the machine, a 4x4 or 3x4 bale. You can line up six bales there. The bales are pushed into the chopper box device, which pushes them through a grid, and they run up a series of conveyors. There's three conveyors in this image before they get over to the load and the compress and eject of the machine. This is where the real work is done on the machine. And then out on the right-hand side, up towards the top of the page, is the product handling system where the bales are ejected, packaged, and stacked for pickup by forklift to move to either transportation method or to storage method. And then our power packs are built inside a 40-foot standard high cube C container. And that provides for the quickest install and a nice contained power room. Moving to slide number 20, this is just a 3D model of the same machine that I just talked about. We're looking at it from the front side, so you can see the feed apron and the slicing system over on the right side of the page, the conveyors that move up, the compression system, and then some product handling over on the other side, and you can also see the power pack just in the back there. These are large machines. You do require a fairly sizable facility to install one of these machines. You probably wouldn't want to look at a building much less than 150 by 100 feet. Page 21 shows a machine that we're just working on installing actually this week. It just shipped the other day. This is a unique machine because it's designed to have zero waste. As these machines work, a lot of product can fall out of the cracks and just fall out of the process. This machine here has a few unique things on it that are designed to collect the material and return them back into the product stream. If you look to the top of the page on the right-hand side, you'll see another smaller machine that's kind of sitting off to the side there. This is a machine that's designed to accept all the reject product from the larger machine, any bales that for some reason don't meet quality, mold or rocks or whatever the case may be, they get ejected out of the system and get transported down to this machine. This is basically a small version of the large press. So we call it the chaff press or a mid-density press. This machine could be a substitute, or it could be used as a small startup option for somebody looking to densify but doesn't have, you know, 100,000 tons of product. It could also be possibly set up at other locations outside of the main processing facility where product can be densified in small areas and then shipped to a central area for storage or reprocessing before it's sent to the final facility. Down on the bottom center, you see a truck that's backed into another device there. This is what we're calling a chaff reclamation system, basically, and it's going to allow the customer to fill walking floor trailers with product from other facilities and transport them over to this machine, back up to the machine, and simply unload into a conveyor system that conveys the loose product that they collected into the machine. Now, this is kind of important because this is where you would take, like, woody biomass, for example, wood chips, product, that sort of stuff. You'd be able to load walking floor trailer, just back it in and unload the loose product. Moving to page 22, this shows the slicing system that we use, and particularly the grid slicing system. This is how we reduce the bales down to a handable, easy-to-use format. We turn them back into loose product, essentially. We push it through a grid. As far as biomass processing goes, it's probably not necessary to use a grid. However, for exporting, the grid allows us not to damage the fiber inside the bale, so we're not using a grinding or a shredding device. We're simply using stationary knives and hydraulic pressure and force to push the bale past these knives, so the internal fibers are never really touched or damaged. So you get a higher leaf retention and higher quality feed at the end of the process. That grid is customizable, and the grid does move up and down in that system to allow for quality control, trimming off bad bottoms, that sort of stuff. You know, when you store a bale out in a field on a gravel pad, depending on how long it's sat there, it'll start to collect that gravel as part of the bale, and when you transport it, it will stay in there, and that's often unacceptable for the future customer of that particular product. Page 23 just shows some close-up images of the grid that we use. And like I was saying before, this can be customizable. Right now, we do a 12-inch grid, which provides an average fiber length of about 6 to 8 inches. And that would be customizable. With that said, you could also pretty much feed this machine with any forage or any biomass process that I've seen today. You could use shredders, grinders. You could put loose product with high moisture in here. There are other issues that do come up when you do that, but essentially you could feed this product into the machine just using the conveyors. You wouldn't have to use the Hunterwood grid slicing system. Page 24 again shows the multiple in-feed options, shows the walking floor trailer backing up to the dump bin and dumping into the conveyors. Page 25 shows a blending conveyor system where the conveyor is mounted into the floor and the product can just be simply dumped onto the floor and pushed into the conveyor that's on an incline, and then it's fed into the machine. And these can be used also to blend product. If you want to make a mix of product, you can put a couple bales into the slicing system, you can put a couple bales into the other feeding systems and blend the two products together so you can get custom mixes of products. Slide number 26 really kind of shows you the keys that we use to speed and efficiency, and that's really from the hydraulics and the programming that we do. This shows you an image of our power pack. Inside the power pack, we have all the motors, the MCC unit, the filtration, a bunch of manifolds and control systems for the different components. On the top of the power pack, the cooling system is mounted. And again, we connect all this stuff to online, and we can control and monitor it from our home base here in Canada, as well as we have a group of technicians that travel and can visit these machines and make repairs and adjustments to them. Page 27 talks about some factors of lost production, some things that we've keyed on as just from our experience. You know, if an employee is stopping the machine, you're not getting your production. Input supply problems and scheduling can be an issue. Motivation of staff, general plant and facility issues, you know, what's being scheduled, you know, are the trucks coming in, sort of stuff. And then you have just your machine breakdowns and maintenance. Hunterwood can help you prevent these kinds of losses through some of our maintenance programs, through our training programs with operators and teaching them how to run the machine. as well as the Hunterwood Online reporting system, which I touched on a little bit earlier, but it's basically a monitoring software that reports to a website that can be logged into from anywhere in the world, and you can check on the production of your machine. So you can see how many bales it produced over the course of the shift. You can see how many times the machine has stopped. It also contains a resource library where customers can go on and can watch videos or download service bulletins on the machine to determine what the next step is for troubleshooting problems that they have or to get using that sort of stuff. We also have a full department here at Hunterwood Technologies, and we also carry parts both in Canada and the United States. We have a warehouse, and we can get parts out very quickly and technicians on the phone to help you troubleshoot your problems. So that's the way that we can help you reduce the downtime in your production facility. Page 28 shows you a couple photos from the presses that you've seen the 3D images on, so you can kind of see the scale of the machine, and you can see the bales coming out and how they're packaged and stacked. Page number 29 gives you the equipment specifications. And I'm just going to jump over that for a minute, and I'm going to talk about the other Hunterwood products. We have a micro-bale chap / blending press, and this is basically a micro version of the large one I was just talking about. It produces a 20 kilogram bale, which is, you know, basically the size of a couple grocery bags. The design is so that individual horse owner could go buy one bale, throw it in the back of their Escalade, and head back to their house and feed their animals. This is one of those machines that could be scaled up to work with biomass. And then the next one on the next page is the mid-density loose product press, and it's basically the middle version of the machine. Makes a 450 kilogram bale. Roughly, it doesn't have some of the same technology, but the cost is also quite a bit smaller, and the production speeds are a little bit smaller. So we do offer kind of everything from a low production, low price machine to a higher priced, high production machine. Page 32 is my contact information. If anybody has any questions and they want to follow up, that's great. So I'm just 29 now, and I'm also going to open it up for questions that talked about here. You want to look over the equipment specifications. That's probably the information that most people are going to want to know. And I'm available to answer any.
Thank you, Brett. Yeah, we'll open it up for questions.
Okay. Brett, this is Sam Tagore from DOE. One question is, it's pretty much, I assume that this is a portable machine, right? I mean, how easy is it, transfer from place to place? How do we do that?
Well, the big machine that I showed you installed in a barn in the photos right now is designed as a stationary machine. The first edition of this machine, which was some 30 presses ago, was truck-mounted. The challenges that you have with this kind of machinery is to get the density that you require. You require a very, very large amount of power and force to get the compression, and to carry the power and the hydraulic capacity to do that, you need a very, very large truck. So when we put it on a truck chassis and built the machine, it became difficult or almost impractical to move it from site to site. With that said, some of the smaller machines could be adapted very easily to go onto a truck. So that, you know, there's kind of some different models that we can look at, and we've only started looking at this, and I want to direct people to the attention of the forage export industry to look at how they've set up their transportation and their distance from port and their distance from product. They've found a central location for the processing equipment to sit permanently, as opposed to travel around to the product. They bring the product to a central processing facility and then send it out from there.
So if somebody wants one of your larger machines, you have to go there and have to install on-site?
That's the way it runs right now, yes.
you have any idea about the cost, how much it, I mean, what will be the price for that?
For a base model of the Hunterwood FC7700, to get you processing, you know, 30 to 40 metric tons an hour, we'd be able to come in at about $1.2 million, and it goes up from there depending on your in-feed options and your out-feed options and the amount of power that you require. To ship one of these machines down, right now it takes about 8 semi-trailers, and we take about 14 days to do the install and commissioning. All told, we're on site for about a month by the time we finish training staff and familiarizing the maintenance department with the new machine that they have.
Okay, so once it is installed, it's very likely that it won't be moved, because machines of that cost could be that if it could be portable, it could travel from place to place depending on the need, you know,
yep.
So-called deployable. So do you think that FC7700 has a possibility of that happening in future?
I believe that the first model that we built of the 7700 was on a truck. You did require special permits to move the truck because of the weight of the machine.
Mm-hmm.
If the future demand for a product that's mobile is there, Hunterwood would certainly look at building another one. You're not going to be able to process 40 tons an hour as easy as you would at a stationary facility, because you need quite a lot of equipment to be able to feed and take the product away from the machine. But
yeah,
certainly we would be willing to explore the option of making a portable or a machine that's easier to transport. And depending on the features that are required in this industry, you know, we've been working with the exporters for such a long time, and quality control is a big issue, and appearance is a big issue, and, you know, some of these things just might not be a factor, so we might be able to eliminate some of the features that have been designed specifically for the forage export industry and give you a machine that's a little bit more utilitarian that can do a specific job, but we just haven't been doing this for long enough with the biomass groups to really determine what the right method is.
This is a hydraulic machine with large horsepower motors, I see. I mean, okay, do you have any analyzed any cost of densification? That means any bale coming to you, after you densify and it comes out from the on the other end, then what is the increase in cost? What is the machine electricity use, or do you have any analysis of that?
I do have a little bit of analysis. Our customers have been pretty good at keeping this information close to their chest because they're competing with other exporters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've heard numbers thrown around that it adds about, processing costs is about $50 a ton, and that to date has been the breaking factor for the biomass industry, and they just can't afford to process the material like that. I believe if you were able to eliminate some of the features and streamline the machine for a more focused purpose, you'd be able to bring that cost down. And the costs also vary quite a bit depending on the location of the machine, the power that's available, the staffing that's available, depending, you know, if it's down in the El Centro, California area. Labor is quite different than up in the Washington area, which is very, very different than what you see in Australia for the labor situation. So all those kinds of things play into it, and quite honestly, we haven't really analyzed it to the level that is probably required for this industry.
Okay. So what you are saying is whatever is the cost of bales coming in, plus add another $50 per ton to get the price of densified bale. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. Wow. All right. And one small question is, you also said in the past, I believe, that round bales have some problems about quality. Could you explain exactly what you meant?
Round bales generally don't meet the quality for export, and they are disregarded for extra quality. They're generally consumed more on a domestic means. When we're looking at reprocessing for export, often the fibers, the way the fibers are positioned inside of a round bale, don't go through the machine very well and don't create a consistent product. They're also harder to stack and harder to store. So the export industry has focused on the square packages, generally speaking, and the round bales are consumed domestically, generally speaking.
Okay. Thank you. I think that's all I had.
Great. Thanks.
Other questions?
Yeah, this is Tim from Ottumwa. When we recompress this forge, do we need to, does the recompression require us to have a drier material to prevent fires or anything like that, or can we maintain typical moisture contents in the, you know, I'm going to say 18-20% range, or do we need to be down in the 10% range or less?
Most of the products that we see going out for export, you know, try and fall in around that 12% range. We do see some higher moisture products coming through the machine. When you get to a certain moisture percentage, the product becomes really sticky and like almost like a residue that starts to build up inside the machine. And then when you get to a higher level of moisture, even beyond that, it almost acts as a lubricant. So there is kind of a, I'll call it the sticky zone for lack of a better word, where the moisture does hamper the compression, and above and below that, it's not as big of an issue. I suspect it would require some on different products and different densities, or sorry, different moisture levels over different kinds of products to determine what the right moisture level is for the particular machines. But if you feed it in to the machine loose, it will compress it and it will eject it. What happens after that is we just don't try and make wet bales, you know, and leave them, have any specific data on that.
So you're not sure if increasing the density makes the material more prone to fires or not? More susceptible to fires if there's a wet spot in there or not?
I don't have any scientific data to back that up, which I know is something that you guys like to have and like to see. My initial feeling would be that when you press it, you're less likely to start on fire because the reduced. Most of the products we are in that 12 to 15 range or less, and we don't see any issues with moisture and spontaneous combustion in those moisture levels.
Other questions?
This is Maynard at Heston. Back again, Sam's question of cost for to compression. What did you say that number was?
I've heard customers throw around custom processing fees of around $50 per ton, and that's, you know, not a great number. I understand that, and I would really hope together doing some research we'd be able to bring those costs down quite a bit. But there are just a significant amount of variables that play into your well. Processing costs, depending on, like I said, your power, the amount of downtime that you have, labor, that sort of stuff can really play into it. I don't have a specific analysis of an individual machine that I can share with you that tells you exactly what processing costs are.
Okay, thank you.
Brett, this is Bob. I had a question about what your customers use to break down the densified bales. Is it hammer mills? What do they use?
Over like final site. Most of the bales are compressed here in North America and get shipped to the Pacific Rim. A lot of them are going into the Middle East right now. Some of the bales, they just simply cut that sleeve off, and because we don't damage the inside flakes of the bale using our grid slicing process, you can just pull it apart. some of the mega dairies and bigger feedlots will use grinders and things like that and just feed the bale into tub grinders. Some of our smaller bales just go right into the front of a bicycle basket and get driven home and fed out to individual, you know, dairy cow owners, that sort of stuff, that will just feed out the flakes. Being a dry product, they don't really cement together. The higher the moisture, the more the product would want to hold together. You can pull apart these bales by hand, though, if you need to. Most of the companies that are handling a 450-kilogram bale are using large equipment and tub grinders and that sort of stuff in their dairy and cattle operations.
Great. Thank you.
Scott, this is Maynard again. Looking at your pictures on slide... is there a tying medium other than the sleeve?
We have used wire tie before, and we've also used polypropylene and polyester strapping material. Those are the three standards that have been developed in the export industry.
But these bales all have some tying medium on them then?
They all have sleeves, generally, yes.
Is there a tying medium plus the sleeve?
No. Sleeve does all the containing.
Okay.
And those sleeves right now are between $1.50 and $3, depending on you get, if you want to put logos and stuff on them, like some of our customers like to do, that does increase. And, we have done some research with burlap sleeves and different materials like that, and we've never really found a in those images.
Hey, thank you.
Any other questions?
Well, this is Sam again. I think I missed it half of your presentation. Your densification is it about 25 pounds per cubic foot or something like that?
Depending on the product that we're using, you know, we strive to get about 28 pounds per cubic foot is what we strive to do. We strive to maximize shipping containers is really the goal at the end of the day, to put as much weight as you possibly can into a shipping container.
But again, with, say, 28 pounds per cubic foot, don't you have your trucks, won't it be overweight? I guess our analysis says roughly about 14 to 16 pounds per cubic foot is probably the right density to have the truck load, whatever is the permitted load, no?
I don't work with inbound trucks a whole lot, so I can't speak that a whole lot. You know, most of our customers are either doing one of two things. They're loading standard shipping containers, and then they're putting them onto chassis and driving them over to the port. And we're able to put 26.5 metric tons in most areas in the United States into those containers. We have a few customers who have figured out that using a train and a boxcar and transloading at the port, best way to go. And we're able to load the rail cars with 100 ton approximately.
Sure.
And they take it for it and they load it into the containers. There certainly are local road restrictions that play into it, but you also have to mind that you're reducing volume and you're...
Yeah, I guess I was saying about the trucks only.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay, thank you.
This is Tim from Ottumwa. I'm looking at slide 28 and trying to understand this sleeve that you're putting on the bales. Is this a pre-made piece of plastic that's actually a tube that you slide over, or is this something you're wrapping around the bales? Can you describe how that function takes place there, or is that...
You bet. It's a tube. It's a polywoven sleeve. And they're made on a loom, basically, and weaved. And the ones in the sleeve are about that you see in the picture have a lace dimension of about 69 inches, and a length of about 45 inches, and they arrive at the customer's site on a pallet in a shipping container, and they just individually sleeve one at a time with an operator. And this machine makes about one bale every 35 seconds at 450 kilograms.
How is the, I guess the thing that's not making sense to me is if the sleeve is holding it together, how do you keep the bale compressed and slide the sleeve over the top of the bale? I guess I can understand how a knotter would work because you're able to hold the system, hold the bale together, and you've got slots cutting, but how do you slide the sleeve over the bale without it blowing back apart while you're trying to slide the sleeve?
You're absolutely right. Good point. If you flip over to slide number 3, left-hand side of the page, you'll see a sleeve.
What is the slide number?
31.
31, okay.
And you'll see a sleeve box on the outside of the press. And this is basically just a steel chamber that holds the bale. And we slide the sleeve on the outside of the chamber. And then the next bale that gets ejected pushes the bale in front of it out. And as it expands, it grabs the sleeve, pulls the sleeve off of that steel chamber.
So it does continue, the bale continues to expand a little bit and tighten up into the sleeve. Is that how it works?
That's exactly what happens. We compress it down to about 39 inches and put it into the steel box, or the sleeve box. The sleeve box holds it compressed until the next bale is ready to be ejected into the box. As the bale comes out, it expands and it grabs the edge of the sleeve, and it expands into the sleeve, making it a tight package. And the final bale width comes 5 inches approximately, so it does about 6 inches after it's compressed. The way our machine works, it only compresses it on one axis, so you only see your growth one dimension.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Hello, this is Randall from Iowa. What are you gaining in kilograms or pounds per bale compared to what's being brought in?
We're roughly doubling the density.
Okay, what about different types of product, whether it be hay, straw, corn stover? Is that a pretty general that it doubles whatever you're bringing in?
That's the goal. Because we're focusing on a different industry right now, we weigh everything both incoming and outgoing on the machine. So instead of, you know, some of the other machines and some of the other processes go by volume, like a mouthful of hay or a bite of hay, and they compress it into whatever, we take a set amount of weight. So we're always trying to put 950 or 960 pounds of product into our machine, compressing it and then ejecting it out. And we just have the amount, we have the power available to us to be able to compress nearly any product into that same package size and that same weight. Now, with that said, products like straw and grass products are a little bit lighter and a little bit harder to press, and you do have to do other things, and the machine is configured to compress, and we call it kill time or grunt time, and it holds the bale in a compressed state with the full force of the hydraulics on it, and this eliminates the memory of the product and eliminates the sponginess of it, and then when the compressed the bale doesn't expand nearly as far. So we've done some testing with specifically rice straw, and we see very similar results. And like I said, there are these machines in existence, and we could certainly set up some tests for other product types if we could get them into a facility and test them. We can get you that kind of if it's desired.
Okay, I don't know if I missed it. What is the size of the bale coming out?
The size of the bale coming out, right, approximately 45 by 45 by 30, weighing 950 pounds approximately.
Any other questions? Okay, I'd like to again thank Brett and Hunterwood for this presentation. I want to make a short announcement that our next teleseminar is scheduled for July 13th. And John Paselius from Case New Holland will be talking about his work and Case's work on using existing current production, agricultural production and equipment for feedstock harvesting and handling. So again, thank you everyone for participating.
Thank you.